lawmakers that the troop surge is overall improving security in the region. The general used a chart to illustrate declines in civilian deaths, ethno-sectarian deaths, and car bomb and suicide attacks. Iraq Ambassador Ryan Crocker followed Petraeus and told members of Congress that Iraqis are struggling to revamp their government. He said the progress is marked by new legislation made by five key leaders who are committed to change. Speaking to the Iraqi parliament today, Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki said Iraqi forces are not ready to take over security from the U.S. military across the country. The prime minister said violence in Baghdad has dropped 75%, but gave no exact figures. Seven U.S. soldiers were killed this morning in a vehicle rollover in Baghdad. A U.S. soldier died Sunday of injuries sustained in combat in northern Iraq. A nationwide poll in Iraq conducted by the BBC and ABC says most judge the U.S. troop surge a failure, although more than half of those surveyed want American forces to stay until security has been achieved. In the U.S., an ABC Washington Post poll says 53% of Americans think General Petraeus's report will be more optimistic than realistic. 66% say President Bush will not alter his Iraq strategy, no matter what the progress report says. A magnitude 6.8 earthquake struck the west coast of Colombia late last night. There are no immediate reports of serious damage or injuries. In northern Mexico, a truck carrying more than 25 tons of dynamite exploded. At least 30 people were killed, more than 140 injured, two dozen of them critically. It's been a week since millionaire adventurer Steve Fawcett disappeared in his small plane over the Nevada wilderness. Searchers say hopes of finding the 63-year-old alive are dimming. Near Baltimore, a teenage college student trapped in his wrecked car for more than a week managed to crawl out and find help on an adjacent highway. The 18-year-old survived strapped in his seatbelt upside down in a creek by catching fish. In Washington Saturday, First Lady Laura Bush underwent surgery for a pinched nerve in her neck. The surgery was successful, and she's returned to the White House. This is QNN.
Are you one of so many people who wish they could wake up in the morning and look at the clock without fumbling for glasses first? I've got news for you. Your wish can come true. Most cases of nearsightedness, farsightedness, and astigmatism can be corrected by the laser procedure known as LASIK. Now, is this procedure without risk or guaranteed? No, but complications are extremely rare, and the outcomes are almost always positive. And if your results aren't exactly as expected, you can be retreated in most cases for no additional cost. You should be realistic about your expectations, though, especially if you're over 40, because unless you have what's called monovision, you will still need your glasses for reading. See your eye doctor about LASIK. I'm Dr. Nancy Eklund.
The preceding message on eye care by Dr. Nancy Eklund has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your eye doctor.
More than two-thirds of the globe's polar bears, and all of them in Alaska, will die off by the year 2050, victims of climate change and thinning Arctic ice. That's according to the U.S. Geological Survey. The only polar bears left will be found in Greenland and northern Canada. Chipmaker Intel has broken ground in China to construct its first computer microchip factory in Asia. The $2.5 billion plan is scheduled for completion in 2010. Advanced Micro Devices today will unveil its new server chip, the first from the company to offer four computing engines on one chip. The launch of the newly designed Opteron is expected to sharpen the chipmaker's competitive edge against rival Intel. The Lundberg survey says the average per gallon price of gas rose 6.5 cents just last week. That's the first increase since July. The highest prices at the pump were found in Chicago, the lowest in New Jersey. Light sweet crude oil is trading at $77.49 a barrel. And on Wall Street today, the Dow Jones is up 10 points at 13,124. The NASDAQ is down 6 points, and the S&P 500 is down 2 points. Gold is trading at $2.50 a gallon. There's more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Claudia Eisman.
Germany, UK, Africa. Second Day. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Thank God it's Monday! As Mark Twain used to said in the Diary of Adam and Eve, Sunday pulled through. Now, we had a nice little weekend here. Very nice little weekend here. Took the kids to the pool on the Sunday just because... Well, you remember the good old days? You remember the public swimming pools opened on Memorial Day weekend and closed on Labor Day weekend? Not quite. Apparently, the pool's closed all during this week, but then it'll reopen for one final weekend next weekend. So we're trying to get them in the water to splash around a little bit. Gather ye seahorses or rosebuds or whatever it is you're supposed to gather before we send them back to school. Before, you know, we are finally done with the elementary school here. Hard to believe. That's Agnes with the not-so-little golf clap. Doodle enters 5th grade middle school. Ferg goes into 6th grade. Margie. Oh, my God. Margie is an 8th grader. That's just... makes my head spin. But that and made a killer pot of chili, if I do say so myself, this weekend. You know, you make I said we, me and that mouse in my pocket. Hello, mouse. Now we make a mean pot of chili around here. Kind of practicing in case we get to do the Beckley chili cook-off in October or something. Just sort of working up the skills. Building the skill set, if you will. Yeah. So it was a pleasant little weekend, and made the more so... I've gotten rather attached to spending my 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern time on Saturdays with Billy Shears and Night Sounds. It really is what it says it is. It's a chance to sort of cast off the political dreck and just enjoy some nice tunes for 3 hours or so. If you haven't popped by to check out Night Sounds. Saturday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and some time that I can't calculate in Arizona. Then you're cheating yourself. You really are. It's an enjoyable 3 hours, and the crowd in the chat room just goes wild. It's a great chat room. The chat room's always fun, but it seems to be particularly enjoyable during Billy Shear's program. And chat room, of course, is free. It doesn't cost you anything to go there to use it. Everything is listener-oriented here. Head on radionetwork.com, click on chat room, and registration's easy, and bang, you're there. It's just that simple. And an update for you. You know, we talked at some extent about the efforts that it takes to keep this all going on Friday evening with the Friday evening front porch session of the show, which I have decided that I will continue. We'll try to do that every Friday night. We'll try to make it a little more special, a little more enjoyable, add in some bells and whistles as time permits. But there was a considerable amount of talk about fundraising issues, and I wanted to let you know that we crossed, thanks to you, we crossed the $1,000 mark. So we are halfway to where we need to be by the end of August. And you have no idea what it means to me. I thank you very, 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 very much. And hopefully, as the other side of that, as I mentioned, is that as more and more of you tell more and more of your friends about what's going on here, we can reduce the individual burden to individual listeners. The other thing is that I wanted to remind you about is that I have kept careful track of those who have shared of their funds with us to keep this on the air. And you've heard from time to time our good friend Alan the Trucker call in. And Alan, in addition to being rather profoundly skilled at moving a really big, scary vehicle around the roads of America, is also an accomplished painter. And at the end of August, all the names go into a hat, and we draw out a winner, and you will be the recipient of a genuine, signed painting by our good friend Alan. And it is good stuff. It's gorgeous. So, you know, I just wanted to update you. We've made it halfway, and we're a little bit over halfway through August. So I have every reason to believe that we will make it to where we need to be. And I appreciate your commitment to that in that regard. Now, down to business. Where do we start? Well, I've got in the stack tonight, I have another, because this, all of a sudden this stuff just seems, maybe it's what I was talking about the other night, and it's a little bit like when you buy the blue Buick and all of a sudden it seems like all you see on the highway is blue Buicks. But it seems like there is just this, there's a flood of evil that is transpiring in Texas. We talked about it Wednesday. We talked about it Thursday. Last Monday with the whole What's the Matter with Texas inquiry. And lo and behold, I've got another one for you this evening. But we're not going to start there. I'm not going to start there at all. No, I think we'll start with something far away from Texas. When I was a kid, my dad loved cop shows, old cop reruns, and there were a few things he liked better than others. And in his later years, he was a devotee of Murder, She Wrote, to the point that I told him that I believed I could, that when I fell asleep at night, I had that you know, just burnt into my brain. Ooh, that intro music for Angela Lansbury. I think he thought Angela Lansbury was kind of hot. But anyway, as a kid growing up, though, one of his favorite programs was Perry Mason, because I know for a fact that he thought Della Street was hot. But he also enjoyed, you know, it was the genre. And, of course, later in life, my dad was a big fan of Law and Order. And so I had a steady dose of that growing up. And so maybe that tends to speak to my fascination with legal and lawyering kind of related issues. And I ran across this particular story over at afterdowningstreet.org. By the way, our particular thanks go out to the folks at afterdowningstreet.org, and most particularly David Swanson, who is a friend of the show and has been on the program. They've added there on every page except the main page. In other words, because the main page is just so chock-a-block full of stuff, they have added a standalone streaming player for the horn to their pages there. It's on every page, every article that you click on, and all you got to do is click on it, and bang, there you go. You're getting the stream. We're trying to make it as easy as possible for people to listen to the program, and I'm hoping that we can get that added to some other web pages as well. Of course, this all began with our good friends Clyde and Wally and Dookie over at WD40.com, who added a standalone player to that web page. And it just makes the programming more accessible. It makes it easier. Ubiquity is the key here for building audience. And if it's easy to get the program, then the more people we hope will be listening in and sharing in the conversation and taking part in the discussion and the reinvigoration of the American dialogue. But anyway, this particular story is sickening, horrifying, and all too typical of the way that America operates now that we live not in America but in Bushmerica, and that's Bushmerica with three Ks. According to an article in The Catholic Worker, military interrogators down at Gitmo are trying to trick information out of the prisoners there by telling them that they are their lawyers. Now, I know it's easy to hate lawyers. It's easier to hate a lawyer than it is to hate a car salesman, and almost as easy to hate a lawyer as it is to hate an insurance salesman. And we've made there's almost sort of a cult status attached to hating lawyers, because they're seen as a bunch of detail-obsessed, petty-fogging little thieves. But it isn't what they are, especially not in the plaintiff's bar, where lawyers take on at complete risk to themselves cases that that most people could not hire somebody at $200 or $500 an hour to tackle. And yeah, there's a contingent fee agreement where the recovery is the basis for how much the lawyer gets paid. I think that's fair. And criminal defense lawyers who get a lot of grief. You know, he was defending a rapist. Well, you know what? We have a legal system that says an accused rapist gets a defense because all people, in the eyes of the law, at least in theory in this country, are innocent until such time as, by a standard of proof called guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, they are proven and found by 12 persons tried and true to be guilty of the crime with which they are charged. They are, in other words, that person charged with the crime is not a rapist until a jury says he is. But the legal profession gets a lot of grief, but it does a profound amount of good and good work. And in fact, it is the last bastion against the advance of dictatorship and fascism in this country. So when I see a story like this coming out of the July issue of the Catholic Worker, I know that we are in as much danger. Our system of government and our freedom in this country is in as much danger as I have ever thought it to be. New York Newsday reports, quote, "The military has set up a system that delays legal correspondence for weeks and requires lawyers from around the country to write motions at a single secure facility in Virginia. Detainees have alleged that interrogators have tried to turn them against their lawyers." And again, the Catholic Worker reporting that military interrogators claim to be lawyers appointed for the defense of these detainees, these political prisoners, these concentration camp prisoners, in order to get them to give out information. Man, that just sounds like something you'd expect from a movie about the Third Reich, doesn't it? The Newsday report says that after meeting with their clients at Guantanamo, lawyers have to turn their interview notes over to guards who send them on to the Pentagon facility in Virginia that is the only place lawyers can go to write their motions. There, the military tries to edit out detainees' claims of mistreatment from the public record. Some military lawyers have been gagged from speaking to the media after they made an allegation that guards are routinely beating Guantanamo prisoners. Australian Broadcasting reported that defense lawyer Lieutenant Colonel Colby Vokey and legal aid Sergeant Heather Cervani, who represent a Guantanamo prisoner, were ordered not to talk to reporters after they filed a formal complaint to the Pentagon about the beatings. I think all the other military defense lawyers have got to be feeling a little bit afraid. An American university law professor by the name of Munir Ahmed said, "There's a chilling effect that this type of gag order has. It further undermines what we know to be a broken system of justice." When you read a story like this, and you see this kind of behavior, you really get a greater... Yeah, they're flying spy planes over the United States. Yes, the satellites that can see through roofs are watching you and your beloved spouse doing something that you would doing things that should be intimate to yourselves. There and it's not just sex I'm talking about. I'm talking about the intimacy of everyday life. I'm talking about the consoling a grieving child who lost a soccer match or got a C instead of a B. The profound intimacies that are the life of the American home. And they're being watched now, and you know it, and I know it, because the Bush administration has admitted it. And a few lawyers, a few braver than average lawyers, are standing up and talking about a process whereby the tools that they are supposed to have in order to provide a zealous and vigorous defense to some of the most hated people in America are thwarted, are headed off, and are defeated. We are fast approaching a place where it is no longer a joke to cite some 1930s bad black and white film wherein the bad guy says, "We will give you a nice fair trial and then you will be taken out and shot." It ain't funny anymore. We have not yet decided whether or not he committed suicide or was shot trying to escape. We are not certain yet. This is a horror. Lawyers have been imprisoned who dared to speak out. Lieutenant Commander Matthew Diaz, January 2005, disclosed information about the Guantanamo prisoners, including their names. For that, he was sentenced to 6 months in a military prison. For merely giving the names of people who are imprisoned at Gitmo. The names, the disappeared, the forgotten ones. Because, of course, the U.S. And you know, this isn't conspiracy theory stuff. This is all documented. At Gitmo and U.S. Secret prisons in the Middle East, the Pentagon and CIA keep what they call ghost prisoners. Concentration camp prisoners whose names don't appear on any documents, whose presence isn't reported to the Red Cross as required by international law. Because, you see, we in America are saddled with an outlaw regime. We in America are as desperately in need of regime change as Iraq ever was. And frankly, George Bush continuing in office only makes more likely that we will never recover. Even if he leaves office when he is legally mandated to do so in January 2009, his continued presence in the White House makes more likely that we will never recover the civil liberties that we have been denied, that have been taken, stolen from us. They were stolen, you do understand that. Do you honestly think that America would go to the polls if it was offered a plebiscite on this issue and say, "Yes, Bush administration, please feel free to spy on my family as we engage in the precious activities of our home life. Do you think American voters would approve of that? I don't. Jose Padilla was convicted last week, and it went largely unnoticed in the American media. He was held for 3 years without charges, without seeing an attorney, without recourse to the courts. He was not convicted of being the dirty bomber with which he was charged by John Ashcroft in, what, May of 2002, was it? The jury that convicted him found him guilty of conduct that amounts to terrorism. This article notes, be warned, though, that the system that convicted him amounts to totalitarianism. The Justice Department and the Pentagon say that the inmates' lawyers are creating unrest among the prisoners, provoking hunger strikes. Yeah, it's the lawyers causing the hunger strikes, not the miserable dog cage conditions in sweltering tropical Cuban heat. It's not beatings causing hunger strikes. It's not abuses causing hunger strikes. It's those pettifogging lawyers. This is astonishing. By the way, there is one issue that screams off this page. In one particular instance, interrogators and soldiers at Gitmo have walked into the prisoners' cells. Tom and told them, according to Tom Wilner, who's a lawyer for 12 Kuwaiti detainees, an interrogator asked one of the clients, by the way, did you know your lawyers are Jews? How does that make you feel, boy? You're being represented by a Jew lawyer. You want a Jew standing up for you? What are they going to think of you back in Mecca, boy? Reckon they'll ever trust you again now that they know that your lawyer's a Jew? And I guarantee you it sounds just like that. Why is the Bush administration so afraid of a few lawyers? Ask yourself that. What does the Bush administration have to fear from lawyers? Why is the Bush administration fighting tooth and toenail lawsuits against it regarding the domestic spying program in which people have been eavesdropped upon all around this country? Why would they need to worry about that? If lawyers are as evil as right-wingers and some left-wingers frequently paint them to be, just a bunch of money grubbers, why are they the single group that the Bush administration fears more than any other? You know, the Bush administration's out there actively trying to stop a trial in a lawsuit against AT&T in California. The plaintiffs claim that the Bush administration, with AT&T's help, spied on them. And the Bush administration says that the trial must be stopped because it would require the White House to reveal if they indeed have illegally spied on the plaintiffs, and then that, in other words, admitting that they had illegally spied on American citizens, would violate state secrets. Man, that just makes all the marbles inside my noggin come loose. We can't have a trial on this, because if we have a trial, somebody from the White House might have to take the oath, and under oath they might have to tell the truth, and the truth is we've been illegally spying on Americans in violation of the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, but if we tell you that we've been illegally spying on you, then the national security is compromised. No, damn it, no. The national security isn't compromised. The Bush administration is compromised. And it has nothing to do with terror. Not yours, at least, but a lot to do with theirs. Because the Bush administration, more than anyone on earth, it's not Al-Qaeda they fear. It's you. It's you in your everyday activities. It's you going about the business of living your lives wherever you are, that the Bush administration fears more than anything else. They live in mortal terror that you might wake up and realize that you have unalienable rights under the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. The Bush administration is terrified that you might actually read the Fourth Amendment and find out that above all, the individual citizen in this country is to be secure in his persons, papers, and effects. And that they shall not be searched and shall not be seized except upon the finding of probable cause and the issuance of a search warrant. Tell me, is there a search warrant out there for you when you pick up the phone to call Grammy? Is there a search warrant out there for your grandchild when the sweet little thing gets on the phone and in the voice of a toddler says, "I love you, Grandma"? Is there a search warrant for you when that happens? No, of course not. No responsible law enforcement agency would ever want to intrude on that level of intimacy. But we are not talking about responsible law enforcement. We are talking about an outlaw regime that has no regard for the Constitution whatsoever, and a president who says it's just a goddamned piece of paper. His words, not mine. And that's just the beginning tonight. Remember, lawyers sneaking in, or not lawyers, interrogators sneaking in, claiming to be lawyers, trying to extract information from prisoners who have no information to give. Lawyers' notes taken from them where they can never see them again unless they travel across country to sit in a locked, windowless room in the Pentagon somewhere, in an attempt to defend their clients. Lawsuits taking place in California, in which the government says admitting that it's spying on American citizens would breach national security. That's the America you live in. Whether or not you care, whether or not you like it, and whether or not you're willing to do something to try to stop it, is another issue entirely. So we'll take our first break of the evening, and we'll come back to your phone calls. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4 head on. That's toll free if you need us to carry the freight. If you can pay your own freight, it's 304-658-5453. Jump in. The conversation's fine here on America's Liberal Voice. Here on the Horn, I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. To request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at BillyShearsMusic.com. That's Erica with a K and Shears, Shears. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
If you missed Strictly Confidential last week, you missed Gay Fashion Tips.
So I'm sitting here in my Florida State University t-shirt and my pajama bottoms.
You missed what gay DJs name their dogs.
Disco and Boogie are their names.
You missed lesbian Bible study.
And that's my favorite line, too, out of the Bible, like, thou shalt not lie with a man, so I don't, and so what's up with that?
You missed kiss and tell.
And this big, tall, handsome Air Force sergeant bent down and kissed me, and I didn't wash my lips for weeks.
You missed the pursuit of happiness.
Are you attached, Mom?
Well, see, now this is Strictly Confidential, isn't it? Stand by
your man. Tune in Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern for Strictly Confidential, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered conversation radio, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. You know you want to.
Brought to you by the Republican National Committee. George W. Bush, Maximum Decider.
Next time you see a stranger on a plane, a stranger with those swarthy looks we all know, ask yourself, shouldn't I be afraid? Maybe he wants to kill me. Maybe he hates us for our freedom. Fear. It's What's for Dinner.
Liberals need to take responsibility. They can't run and hide. Pissed us off, so we voted for Republicans. A form of suicide.
Republican side!
Yes, they do. Oh, my God, yes, they do. I don't know. Remind me toward the end of the program. I'll tell you my experience with a genuine, bona fide, dumber than a bag of rags right-winger later this evening. You listening, Mad Brad? let's see. Let's go to the phones. Gene is calling from Oregon. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, I'm not doing too bad. Just need more sleep. But anyway,
don't we all?
Yeah, we all do. I just want to let you know I posted something on the blog, apparently the Canadians are, at least 5,000 of them, are protesting up at the Senate that our fearless leader is up at. They're afraid we're going to...
Montebello, Canada, isn't it?
Yeah, and I guess they're probably right, because we're trying to negotiate to trade, get their water, to come up there. Now, I was reading the article, and the article happens to mention that Canada is, it has one quarter, I think, of the fresh water on the globe, and that Dick Cheney quote came to my mind about the Iraq oil supplies, and I gotta wonder how long before, we stop going to Iraq and decide, Winnipeg is a lot closer. And not to mention there's oil sands in Alberta.
True.
So it's up on the blog. If anybody wants to read it, I just had to throw that up there. The things we do for resources. And I lived in Tucson, so I know it's hot down there, but, there's got to be something we could do this night a better way than this. I had to throw that out there because I know how you feel about coal, and it's like, yet another resource to exploit.
Sure.
So, oh, God. Anyway, I will let you get back to the radio gig, and thanks for letting me talk to you.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Gene. Anytime. Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And David, calling from Maine. Hey, David, welcome aboard.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I'm doing all right. I was watching the series of The Wire, second season. I don't know if you started watching it yet.
I started, but I didn't get to get very far into it.
I became so addicted to it last night. Oh, season two. I watched it all the way through, even with headaches. I was like, I gotta stop watching.
It's making my brain hurt.
I know, if you add it up, though, I mean, it's like, oh my God, I mean, the time. Because it's not like a half hour show, again, and it's not like 40 minutes. It's, it's 58 minutes every show.
Yeah. That's kind of what makes the HBO stuff rather enjoyable.
Yeah. I was learning a lot about the drug game and surveillance and all of that, and I think it's really, I don't know at what point you're at, but I think the characters are really believable, and I like how it unveils itself.
Well, I'm very early in the process. I mean, the writing's good, the production values are good,
right.
The acting's doggone good.
Yeah.
So, I'm looking forward to it, and it does kind of grab you. I'm looking
wait until it unfolds. I mean, you'll be like, wow, they really thought this out of every single angle.
Oh, I love that kind of stuff.
It's pretty impressive, and I mean, it's not to be expected what happens. So.
Well, I get the idea. I'm one of these people who thinks The Usual Suspects is one of the greatest movies ever made. So.
Yeah. I love that movie too.
So, it's the same mindset that enjoys that.
Yeah, I always like a big, I'm always in the big, great police drama. But anyways, that's not what I called about. Well,
not really.
Yeah, I called about something else. I have a question for you. If you had $11 million in your bank account, somebody transferred it, would you give it back if somebody made a mistake? That goes the question to everybody, actually. That's the question of the night, Bob. No, that's my new segment here, the question of the night. Would you give $11 million back in your bank account if it was transferred as an error?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of easy. It's not mine.
Well, this couple is refusing to give it back. The Westpac Bank launched a legal action against North Coast real estate agent Victor Aulis, who drew checks but denies any fraud. He yesterday told the Supreme Court that if Westpac can't do their job properly, it's the bank's responsibility. Mr. Aulis had an automatic transfer facility within the bank which topped up his business account using funds from his personal account. The transfer should have been stopped after his personal account was overdrawn in February 2004. But due to an error at Westpac, his account continued to be replenished only with money from the bank's own pocket. Between June and December 2005, Westpac honored checks totaling about $11 million written by Mr. Aulis. The bank...
$11 million?
Yeah, no, that's how crazy they are.
Okay, well, you know, stupid.
So that's why I brought up the question. If you had $11 million in error in a bank account, would you give it back? And my quick answer is, if I was spending it and I was buying a Lotus sports car and I had a pad in Miami or stuff like that, I would be like, well, just stop. Just stop sending me money. It's an error.
Well, yeah. Apparently, this guy has the sort of monopoly board approach to accountancy and life. Even, you know, it's where you draw that card from Community Chest that says "bank error in your favor, collect $50."
Right, but at the same time, if they make the error and then they put it in the bank and you're spending that kind of money, I mean, I would be like, hey, you guys made the error, live with it.
Yeah, but can this guy at the same time, can he make any sort of claim that he didn't, that he thought he had a legitimate claim to the money? I mean, when I think about those ethical conundrums, I think about the thing where you find some guy's wallet with his, you know, with his take home pay, you know, maybe he's got $1,100 or something in the wallet, and I go and I find the guy. That's easy, because that's another person, that's another working stiff out there trying to get who is living in hell for having lost the money, or if you, you know, we're movie people, you and me, David.
Right.
You think about the missing money from It's a Wonderful Life,
right?
And it was and there's, you know, there's that evil old Potter who's sitting there knowing where the money is, and he's gleefully watching George just descend into the depths of hell over it. And he's willing to watch him, you know, be pilloried by the bank examiner for misappropriation of funds when it was all old Uncle Billy's fault.
Well, Mr. Aulis, he says, I haven't fraudulently misused the bank in any way. The Kempsey couples whose assets have been frozen by the NSW Crime Commission, I'm guessing this is Australia, representing themselves as the bank seeks to recover the money. Like I said, if a bank makes an error and they bungle it and you've spent some of it and they're asking, and they're, I don't know if they spend, it looks like maybe they did spend some of it. But if it's in your bank error, and maybe this guy, I'm guessing this guy has a big account. He's not doing too bad.
Yeah, he's got, but he also got himself into an overdraft situation, so.
Right.
You got to wonder if he's on the up and up.
But again, Bob, the tables are turned. I mean, if we did an error on the bank.
Oh, yeah, they don't waste any time.
They don't waste any time. It's $11 million. How many months is this? I mean.
Yeah.
If you can't do your job correctly in a bank, I mean, you're going to have to eat part of it. That's the way I look at it. Anyways, that was my special interest story of the day.
Okay.
The second one is, guess who's back writing up Ed's columns again? We talked about him before, Bob, and we both have a indifference to him. And I mentioned him before, Robert Baer. And one of the reasons the indifference I have on him, I remember when he went on the Tom Hartman show, and I read both of his books, by the way, See No Evil, Hear No Evil, and Sleeping with the Devil. The story of Washington and Saudi Arabia, the oil story. But the one thing that strikes me about Robert Baer is he's the kind of guy that likes to torch fires. Because I remember when he was talking to Hartman and he brought up 9/11, and he had made a suggestion in the column that he thought that 9/11 was an inside job, and all of a sudden Baer goes off target and says, "Well, I do think that some Iranian officials also had something to do with it." And I was like, I just wanted to slap myself in the head.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And then, here he is again, and this is his op-ed on Information Clearinghouse. It's a real short op-ed, and it says, reports the Bush administration will put Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps on the terrorism list can be read in one of two ways. It's either more bluster or ominously a wind-up for a strike on Iran. Officials I talked to in Washington vote for a hit on the IRGC maybe within the next 6 months, and they think that as long as we have bombers and missiles in the air, we will hit Iran's nuclear facilities. An on-shock campaign light, if you will. But frankly, they're guessing. After Iraq, the White House trusts no one, especially the bureaucracy. As with Saddam and his imagined WMD, the administration's case against the IRGC is circumstantial. The U.S. military suspects but cannot prove that the IRGC is the main supplier of sophisticated improvised explosive devices to insurgents killing our forces in Iraq and Afghanistan. The most sophisticated version of explosive form projectiles or shaped charges are capable of penetrating the armor of an Abrams tank, disabling the tank and killing the crew. A former CIA explosives expert who still works in Iraq told me, "The Iranians are making them. End of story." His argument is only a state is capable of manufacturing the EFPs, which involves a complicated annealing process. Incidentally, he is also convinced the IRGC is helping Iraqi Shiite militias sight in their mortars on the green zone. The way they're dropping them in knee grids tells me all I need to know, that the Shia are getting help. And there's no doubt it's Iranian, the IRGCs. A second part of the administration's case against the IRGC is that the IRGC has had a long established history of killing Americans, starting with the attack on the Marines in Beirut in 1983. And that's not to mention it was the IRGC that backed Hezbollah in its 34-day war against Israel last year. The feeling in the administration is that we should have taken care of the IRGC a long, long time ago. Strengthening the administration's case for a strike on Iran, there's a belief among neocons that the IRGC is the one obstacle to democratic and a friendly Iran. They believe that if we were to get rid of the IRGC, the clerics would fall and our 30-year war with Iran over. It's another neocon delusion, but still, it informs White House thinking. And what do we do if just the opposite happens? A strike on Iran unifies Iranians behind the regime. An administration official told me it's not even a consideration. IRGC IDs are a case casus belli for this administration. There will be an attack on Iran. You know, basically what Bear is talking about, and see, the reason why he mentions Iran, let's break this down.
Well, first of all, it's a little bit phony, isn't it, David? Because,
yes.
Okay, it's a lot phony. It's you know, more of these gut feelings like Michael Chertoff has. Only a state could do X, Y, Z, you know, that kind of thing. That's subject to debate. The second thing is that while he's sitting there and trotting out stuff that is being, you know, more or less spoon-fed to him by the administration, the same way they do other media outlets, where they think, oh, well, we know that Iranians are in Iraq and they're helping the Shia minority, blah, 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 or yeah, majority, blah, blah.
But wait.
Yeah. What they're not saying that is far more telling. Because yeah. Every time you say, we know the Iranians are in Iraq and they're helping the Shia, it should immediately be followed by, just as we know the Saudis are in Iraq helping the Sunnis. Okay? Because they are. And they are both killing our people.
To be fair, Bob, everyone's killing everybody at this point.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I know. That's kind of my point.
This is the thing that I want people to understand. I'm breaking this down for everyone. Robert Baer also wrote a novel, people. He wrote a novel that came out, I think, last year, 2005. It's called Blow the House Down. And here's what it involved. It involved a 9/11-type scenario. Again, it's a fiction novel, but, you know, a 9/11 scenario where, guess who's the culprit, people? Can you guess?
Iran?
Yes. Iran is the culprit. See, people get fixated on one country that they see. They have an agenda that they go, oh, this country is evil. I know it's evil. You know, it's like those fundamentalist preachers or those really fundamentalist, believers. They say, it's evil. I know it's evil. How can you prove it's evil? I don't need proof. I talk to God or something like that. But,
yeah,
you know, what he just said, see, here's the thing that I question, Bob, when I read this, and a lot of people should question this as well. When you make an accusation as strong as this, and a claim like this, where you really don't know that, I don't live in Iran, so I can't really tell you that much about it. I can tell you what I know about it from reading Sean Penn's op-eds in a little pieces from here and there, and maybe what Robert Baer is saying about the cultural landscape. But when it comes to the politics and the structure, the political structure, and what's evil and what's good, I can't fly with that, Bob.
No, because there's a good reason for you not being able to go with it, because it assaults every last bit of your ability to critically reason.
Right. And here's another thing that I point out. When he says an anonymous official, I don't hear a real player soundbite. So I don't know. I don't even know if this was said.
Right. I mean, okay, you want the official to be anonymous, that's fine. Record his voice and make it sound like a Cylon so we can't tell who it is.
Make it sound like a Cylon. Make it sound like Alvin. I don't care.
Yeah, I know.
This is ridiculous, and we accept these op-eds. By the way, this is in Time magazine. It's not just an Information Clearinghouse. So when people read this, they're going to be saying, well, basically, Bear is saying, in case people didn't catch the gist of it, what he's saying is you're doomed if you do and you're doomed if you don't.
So we might as well take a few out along the way with us.
That's basically what he's saying. I goes, I know Iran's up to something. He goes, but those neocons are delusional. But I just don't know what to do. But we better make a decision now.
And that, of course, you know what?
How does that make it any different than the neocons?
Act in haste, repent at leisure. You know what I mean?
That?
Act in haste, repent at leisure.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, keep an eye out for this stuff, David. It's everywhere. You can't swing a dead cat without hitting one of these baseless assertions about Iran.
I got to tell you, when people go under the auspice of making a fictional novel, I mean, it's always good to see what the subject is, because especially former CIA, because they like to put their own agenda and their own beliefs and deeply root them in this novel. And I got to tell you, everything I've read with Robert Baer in mind, he has this fixation on Iran that you wouldn't believe. And I don't quite frankly.
But
he's not
the only one. I mean, our dear friend Mark Levine and I differ profoundly on Iran. I guess my brain's just wired wrong or something. I don't know why we're worrying about Iran getting a nuke 10 years from now when Pakistan is chock-a-block with crazy people who would like to use them now.
Well, you know, Bob, it also is it's a tinge of xenophobia, and I think it's also a tinge of racism.
It's more than a tinge.
Yeah, I'm being politically I'm being politically generous here. But, you know, I mean, look at Mexico, and look at how bad we treat the Mexican illegal immigrants. We treat them like dogs and animals. But Bob, when it comes to European immigrants, what do we say? Oh, we don't say anything about that. They're not dogs or animals. It's the Mexicans.
Meanwhile,
perverts coming across the border, coming to kill and rape our children.
And clean our toilets. Yes, I know.
Yes, and clean our toilets. So, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, all I can leave you with is this. I mean, we need to counter somehow more of these people who do these op-eds and do these things and say, what is it you're trying to say? What is it you're trying to address? Go into their columns and hit up their discussion, their discussion feedback. Do that for starters.
Well, you know, there's full-on intellectual countering of all those arguments, and then there's another way. And the other way is what happened in my sick and twisted little mind when you said Robert Baer. You know what the first thing that happened to me was? Didn't he play Jethro?
What is that?
Didn't he play Jethro?
Did he play Jethro?
Yeah, on the Beverly Hillbillies. Robert Baer. No, that was Max Baer. that's the kind of thing that drives serious people crazy, when you refuse to take them seriously. And that's the thing. Too many of these neocons and these war lovers and these blood-soaked monsters, by taking them seriously in one way, when we take them seriously, we lend them credibility. When we sit down, when you sit, you know, the crazy old dude at the end of the bar who's drunk out of his mind and just babbling away, when you sit down and treat him like he has legitimate ideas, you legitimize the ideas by treating. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I understand completely, and you know.
And so when we take these people and they say, you know, we must attack Iran now, when you don't just go right at them and say, shut up, you're drunk.
I know. That's what you have to do. Because right now, I mean, you literally have to scream at the gates because you can't get beyond the gates. So that's what you have to do. It's that simple. We can't get, those gates aren't open. When they do open, We only have a short window to get in as many people as much as our say as possible. But we can shift things in a positive direction, I believe, if we constantly keep the shouting on.
Yeah. No, I understand. And remember that part of the approach on that has to be, you're nuts. You have nothing. No, you're not offering anything valid. You're not. This is not. With people like that, you're just crazy. Step aside. Step aside.
You know, Bob, someone should have turned to Tony Blankley a long time and says, you know what? You're a career opportunist. What does anything you have to say have to do with one tinge of credibility? And no one has done it, Bob. No one. They just let him speak and speak and speak. I'm just sitting there when I watch the McLaughlin Group, and I'm like, my God, turn to him. Say he's a career opportunist.
Yeah, or, you're drunk. You're drunk, aren't you? You've been drinking before the program, haven't you? That's the only way you could have these ideas. Sure.
I mean, to me, Bob...
Well, I mean, look at Tony Snow. Look at Tony Snow, David.
Yeah, yeah.
Back in the day, there was a saying or a play or a movie or I forget, book, whatever. What if they gave a war and nobody came?
Mm-hmm.
Taking that idea and extrapolating it into our present, can you imagine what would happen? What would happen if everybody gave Tony Snow the credibility that he deserves? In other words, what if Tony Snow trotted out for his White House press briefing and he faced a whole bunch of empty seats because people had stopped coming because they're tired of being lied to?
You know, again,
what would
people
that say?
Should have stood up to Tony Snow a long time ago when he was on Fox, and if he was his guest hosting on his own on the Fox News TV channel, and they should have said, "Why are you being so smarmy and so condescending to anyone who has an oppositional view? I mean, don't you see anything wrong with that?" But nobody did that. They just nodded their head and said, "Yup."
Yeah, okay, well, we have a difference of opinion. Yeah, no, and you legitimize it that way. I know.
You can't treat them with mittens anymore. My God, you have to put on the boxing gloves and pow.
And it's time to stop pretending that this is the cocktail party circuit, because it isn't. Hey, David, we're overdue for the news. Thanks for everything, man.
Bob, I just wanted to share those stories with you.
I appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
All right, later.
Later. And news is on the way. Look, get in line. Get involved. 304-658-5453 or 877-443-2366, 877 the numeral 4, head on. Better discussion and conversation here, I will warrant, than virtually anywhere else. And God knows on any terrestrial program in America. Because that's what we're designed for here at the Horn. And we are America's liberal voice. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is a Quality News Network. The Mexican Riviera is preparing for Hurricane Dean, which experts say is gaining power as it barrels toward the Yucatan Peninsula. The Category 4 hurricane could grow to a Category 5 just as it hits land. Officials call for a red alert for Mexico's Caribbean coast. Tourists are evacuating, and officials have shut down offshore oil facilities. On the Japanese island of Okinawa, 165 passengers managed to safely evacuate a jet just before it exploded in flames on the airport tarmac. Authorities say that China Airlines jet's left engine blew up 1 minute after landing. A roadside bomb killed the governor of Shiite Mutana province in Iraq. It's the second assassination of a top provincial official within a week. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki arrived in Syria for his first visit there since taking office last year. U.S. officials say that Syria is allowing foreign fighters to cross its borders as its capital city struggles with a growing number of Iraqi refugees. French Foreign Minister Bernard Kouchner met with President Jalal Talabani and other Iraqi officials in the first visit by a French official since the beginning of the war. And the Pentagon has set up 25 goals to achieve before President Bush leaves office. Only one of those addresses Iraq. 8 are related to the war on terror. The head of the Senate Judiciary Committee says time's up for President Bush to produce evidence that his surveillance program is legal. Senator Patrick Leahy says the Bush administration is in contempt of Congress. In Peru, bulldozers are now moving rubble from last week's magnitude 8 earthquake as workers are forced to give up hope of finding more survivors. So far, 540 bodies have been recovered. In Montebello, in Quebec, a meeting of North American leaders sparked protests. President Bush, Canada's prime minister, and Mexico's president discussed a so-called security and prosperity partnership. Demonstrators say the leaders are ignoring the rights of ordinary citizens by not consulting the U.S. Congress or Canada's parliament. Representative Democrat Bob Filner of San Diego will go to court on assault and battery charges after he reportedly pushed a United Airlines bag claim employee Sunday at Dulles Airport. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Hey, what's he doing?
What?
That guy is changing his oil in the street and letting it run right in the storm drain, which pollutes the bay. I totally wouldn't surf in that.
Dude, what can we do?
Call 1-800-CLEANUP to report anyone dumping oil, antifreeze, or paint in the street.
This way, fools like that can be fined.
Tell everyone to call 1-800-CLEANUP.
Taking care of the marine sanctuary is your duty. From Mayos at Monterey High.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to 1 million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
The space shuttle Endeavour is on its way home from the International Space Station. It's scheduled to land tomorrow. NASA ordered the shuttle to return a day early as a precaution to avoid any problems Hurricane Dean may create for the space agency. An attorney has filed a class action lawsuit against Mattel regarding its massive recall of Chinese-made toys that were found to contain lead. The attorney filing the suit says he wants the toy company to pay for the testing of children exposed to the toys who may have lead poisoning. In New Zealand, the government has discovered Chinese-made woolen and cotton clothing containing 900 times the safe level of formaldehyde. The toxic chemical may cause cancer. The Associated Press reports its analysis of DEA statistics indicates use of the nation's 5 most popular painkillers surged 90% between 1997 and 2005. The use of the chemical oxycodone increased sixfold. Another casualty of the mortgage meltdown, Capital One Financial Corp says it'll shut down its Greenpoint mortgage unit, eliminating 1,900 jobs. Light sweet crude is trading at $71.12 a barrel. Gold is at $666 an ounce, up 50 cents. The Dow closed up 42 points, the NASDAQ up 4. And there's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Crisson.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Nine past the hour, I'm Bob. You're you, and we are one together, cuckoo ka-choo. We're going to go straight to the phones in a second. First, an email from our good friend Marty, who says, "You kidding me? In case you haven't noticed, just having an offhand accusation tossed your way means you're guilty. You can never be proven innocent. There can be no friggin' evidence against you. Never mind, you're guilty." This is about the legal system and the way it's supposed to work. Also, considering what I said about the spying on Americans, it's time to go back and rewatch Minority Report. I'm not saying there's not some truth in that, but the way it is, the accusation business, the accusation being equated with guilt, that part of it's not a function of the legal system. That part of it is a function of the way cases are reported. And, of course, the most pernicious of these are trumped up sex crime charges. Because there are people out there who are unscrupulous, who, and you see it a lot in divorce, in ugly divorces, people who, people who will use the charge of a child sexual abuse case as a lever in heated domestic cases, divorces. And they try to use that accusation as a club to get their way. But I'd say that's a fairly small percentage. You know, was Scooter Libby subjected to guilt by accusation? That's a tough one, because we had a pretty good idea of what the evidence was, and it was pretty clear that you know, in the court of public opinion, that the great weight of evidence stood against him. O.J. Simpson, is there any doubt in the world that he killed his wife in one of the most brutal manners imaginable? If I did it. No, O.J. No juice, baby. You did it. So, I understand some of what Marty says, but by the same token, the right to trial, the right to a fair and impartial trial, remains a cornerstone of what this country is supposed to be. If some of that has fallen away, then it is... it's not the fault of the idea, it's the failing of the people applying them. Long before September 11th ever happened, the Fourth Amendment had been reduced to merely a shell, but it was still there. Now, after 9/11, after the Patriot Act, after the wiretapping, after the domestic spying, the Fourth Amendment has been effectively killed. It is good on paper only. Because they're very simple. They're very simple. You know, you can't search a person's person, papers, homes, effect, property or effects, without a search warrant issued upon a finding of probable cause. You just can't. It says you can't. It's plain language. But over the course of over 200 years of interpretation, courts have injected a whole lot of yeah buts into it. You want to read one of the most startling and stark and horrifying yeah buts applying to the Fourth Amendment? Go read U.S. v. Leon. It'll curl your hair. It creates a good faith exception to abuses of the Fourth Amendment. As long as the cops are acting in good faith, then it's okay, no matter what they do. If, for instance, the search warrant says apartment 13A and they go into apartment 13B and gun down a baby, it's okay as long as they were acting in good faith. The dissent in that case, authored by, God rest his soul, Justice William Brennan, was profound. And he saw where it was going. Go read it if you, if you like to read that kind of thing, because reading Supreme Court cases is a lot like playing Where's Waldo. You know, it's not a fun experience unless somebody's paying you to do it. Or you're doing it for a grade or something like that. Anyway, thanks, Marty. I appreciate the input. I just don't. I haven't given up on the system entirely as yet. Not as yet. To the phones, Bob, North Dakota. Hey, Bob, how you doing? Oh, we lost Bob. Darn the luck. He'll call back, I'm sure. So, just to continue this legal theme, there is a story that came out of the L.A. Times. Now, in the thing that I shared with you regarding interrogators going into Gitmo prisoners' cells and telling them that they're lawyers. See, in a society that actually was still operating under the rule of law, those sons of bitches would be charged for the unauthorized practice of law. And they'd get busted. But, you know, they're operating under the aegis of the Bush administration, so it's hard enough to, A, find out that they're doing it, and, B, once you do, it's almost impossible to prosecute them. This particular story from the L.A. Times just makes my skin crawl. Right up there with the stuff that was mentioned in the other article about how the government seizes the lawyer's notes and sends them to a secret room in the Pentagon, and that's the only place you can go and write the brief. That is chilling stuff. That is bone-chilling stuff. Well, there out in Oakland, California, there's a lawyer by the name of John Eisenberg. And he is counsel in a case called Al Haramian Islamic Foundation versus George W. Bush. And he says it's the most bizarre thing he has ever been involved with. Among other things, he had to write a brief in the case. And it was a response brief. The government had written its brief and submitted it to the court. And Mr. Eisenberg was called upon to respond to it. Now, if you're called upon to write a letter to the editor, you generally have to have the article in front of you to refer to so that you can make some sense of what it is you're trying to get across in responding to the article. If you're in a court setting and one side writes a brief about the applicability of a rule, you get the brief and you respond to their arguments. It's the nature of argument and response. It is presentation, rebuttal, sur-rebuttal, that kind of thing. Well, not for Mr. Eisenberg, because the government wrote the brief, the government submitted the brief, and he said, well, okay, and then he was called upon to respond to the brief, and he said, okay, I'll respond to the brief. Where's the brief? And they, oh, you can't see the brief. You have to respond without knowing what's in the government's brief. You have to guess. Well, okay, I'll do my best. Let me sit down here. No, 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 you can't write your brief in your office. I can't? No. Where can I write my brief? In Washington, D.C. Huh? Yeah, you got to come all the way from Oakland, California to Washington, D.C. to write your brief. Well, okay. Let me get my briefcase together and pull my notes together. No, you can't bring your notes. Well, okay, I'll copy some law cases out of the books here that I want to cite. No, you can't do that either. You can't have any notes. You can't have any books. You can't have any cases to cite. You can't have anything. Okay, well, I'll just bring my computer. Don't bring your computer. You can't have that either. I'm not kidding. This isn't crazy old Bob improvising and making up something ridiculous to drive home a greater point. Uh-uh. This is really what happened. This, in this particular instance, he was taken into a room inside a building in Washington. It had no windows. It had some bookshelves in it, but all the books had been pulled out. There was nothing in it. When he got hungry, one of his guards, he was guarded like a common criminal. One of his guards brought him a banana. Wait. When he was done with the banana, they put the banana peel through a shredder. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. The article was penned by Henry Weinstein, a staff writer for the Los Angeles Times. It appeared in the August 15th edition of the paper. And Mr. Weinstein writes, in most of the cases, including Al-Haramian's, the government has contended that any disclosure about the surveillance program, you know, the domestic spying program, would reveal state secrets and has refused to say whether the plaintiffs were wiretapped. Then it moves to dismiss the complaint. However, there was a little bit of a screw-up in the Al-Haramian case, because the Department of the Treasury accidentally let it slip some National Security Agency call logs that were stamped top secret that indicated that the charity, the Al-Haramian Islamic Foundation, which is a charity, that the charity and two of its attorneys, its lawyers, for the love of God, its lawyers, had been spied on. So last year, U.S. District Judge Gar King ruled that the logs, referred to in the court papers as the document, gave the charity standing to sue the Bush administration in federal court. As of last week, on the 15th, Eisenberg and Justice Department lawyer Thomas Bondi were to have 20 minutes each to argue over Judge King's decision before a three-judge panel of the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. The argument was conducted in public, but the vast amount of the information in the case remains shrouded in Bush administration governmental secrecy. They've redacted the government's motions, filed them under seal, and the publicly released filings have big redactions that say redacted text, public text continues on page 6. Remember when we talked about redactions last? Judicial Watch obtained documents from the FBI that had been redacted, and the redactions were removed, and that's how we found out that the plane that flew all over the country after 9/11, when no other plane was allowed in the airspace, this plane that flew all over the country picking up Saudi royals had been rented either by the Saudi royal family or Osama bin Laden. That was what had been redacted, was who had rented the plane. Well, that's the kind of sleazy stuff that the government wants to claim national security will protect them from having to have revealed. Even Eisenberg's own brief on the case has been redacted, because his allegations are considered too much for the public, too much for the readers, too much for we, the people of the United States, to know. Now, Mr. Eisenberg was asked a week ago if there was any way, under the government's interpretation of the law, that somebody could contest the surveillance program. I'm sorry, it wasn't Mr. Eisenberg. The government lawyer, senior Justice Department official, replied, in the current context, no. No one can contest the surveillance program. Now, for the article, Mr. Weinstein contacted a Georgetown University constitutional law professor by the name of David Cole. And he said the Al-Haramian case presented a daunting undertaking for a lawyer and a threat to the rule of law. He said, quote, the whole adversary system of American law is predicated on the notion that both sides get to see the facts and the law that is presented to the judge. He said, doing what has been done to Mr. Eisenberg cuts out the heart of the adversarial system. As he prepared for the hearing, Eisenberg called the Al-Haramian case the most difficult in his 27-year legal career. He also said that asking him to do what he had to do in the fashion in which he had to do it was enforced legal malpractice. He couldn't see what was in the sealed government brief. Quote, I could only guess. I thought a lot about what I wanted to draft and tried to commit it all to memory, because he wasn't allowed to have his notes. What was it that Abraham Lincoln said? A lawyer's time and his advice are his stock in trade. Well, the Bush administration deprived Mr. Eisenberg of his stock in trade. In his brief, Eisenberg describes in rather cryptic fashion what happened on June 26th when he and his co-counsel, Steve Goldberg, had to write their sealed response brief under what he called a highly unusual and objectionable restrictions imposed by the government. He notes they were not allowed to bring notes or law books to the drafting session. One of their co-counsel was barred from participating. Justice Department lawyer Anthony J. Coppolino, whom one wonders how he gets up and goes to work every day without just going out and ending it all for the evil that he's doing, sent Eisenberg a letter denying that the government had attempted to prevent a third lawyer from being present. He said he was disappointed by Eisenberg's characterizations, given, quote, the accommodations that the court security officer went out of her way to make for you. Well, what were those accommodations? In the letter, Coppolino says, quote, given our many discussions over the past 17 months, it should hardly come as a surprise to you that the classified information at issue has to be treated in accordance with federal requirements. Those requirements are why, just like us, you cannot process the information on your personal computers, store it in your individual homes or offices, or file it merely under seal with unauthorized personnel in unapproved facilities. Goodbye, democracy. Goodbye, freedom. It was nice knowing you. Eisenberg says that the morning of the session, he and his co-counsel Goldberg arrived at the federal courthouse. I'm sorry, it wasn't in Washington, D.C. It was in San Francisco. They were met by a Justice Department thug named Erin Hogarty. I'm sorry, she was a security officer. Well, she marched him upstairs to one of the floors that is used by the U.S. Attorney's Office in San Francisco. We know a little bit about the U.S. Attorney's Office in San Francisco from the Josh Wolf case, don't we? Eisenberg says they were very gracious. They showed us to our special little hush-hush room. It was an 8-by-10-foot cell, lined with wood and metal bookcases which had been completely emptied. The room had a telephone, tables, desk chairs, a laptop computer, and a printer. He and Goldberg were forced to turn over their cell phones and the batteries from their laptop computers. They couldn't have any legal texts. They were, however, allowed a photocopy of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act of 1978. During the entire time that they were writing their brief, two security guards, stood outside the room. He left twice, Eisenberg did, to go to the bathroom. He mentioned near lunchtime that he was beginning to get hungry, and that's when security officer Hogarty, who went to such extreme measures to be courteous to them, brought him a banana. At one point, Hogarty stuck her head in and told the gentleman that they could hear their voices outside the room and they needed to be quiet. And he was asked, Eisenberg was, if he had ever had to write a brief without any notes or law books. And he said, of course not. Under any other circumstances, that would be legal malpractice. 3 hours later, he signed each copy of his brief. He placed them on the table side by side and put the banana peel above them and earlier drafts to the right of the banana peel. We called in Hogarty. He said, I told her, here's everything, even the banana peel. They were not allowed to keep a copy of their brief. We were allowed, he says, to print out five copies of the final document, one for each judge, one for the government attorneys, and one to be retained in a Justice Department supervised safe. Then Hogarty shredded the early drafts of the brief and shredded the banana peel. Then she gave back the cell phones and the laptop battery. He quoted his July 3rd public brief. The soul of America's government is transparency, openness in the affairs of its three constitutional branches. I think he got his verb tense wrong. The soul of America's government was transparency, openness in the affairs of its three constitutional branches. To this day, Mr. Eisenberg has still not been allowed to see the double secret probation brief. Why? I'm pretty sure you know the answer, don't you? Because I know the answer too. And the answer is that you can't, Mr. Eisenberg, nor you nor I can read these briefs, because they would require impeachment proceedings to be begun immediately against the Bush administration. That's why the Bush administration will not go under oath in the case that's before the Ninth Circuit in California regarding AT&T. They've offered to be interviewed, but they won't testify under oath. The Ninth Circuit judges in the trial with AT&T in California wondered why at least one key issue can't be explored, whether there was domestic spying on Americans without court approval. Judges Margaret McCown and Michael Daley Hawkins, who were both Clinton appointees, noted public comments by President Bush and other administration officials denying that any such warrantless domestic surveillance is taking place, and they asked the government why it can't provide similar statements under oath in the court case. The AT&T lawyer told the judges that George Bush has already issued denials publicly. And Judge Hawkins said that public statements aren't the equivalent of statements under oath in a court or in court declarations. He said, no court in the land would be satisfied with public statements, be it the President of the United States or the President of AT&T. This is the America we live in now. If you've got some crazy-ass notion that you are safe, that you are secure in your person's paper, property, and effects, I suspect you're probably one of those millions of Americans who are, according to the Associated Press, gobbling pain pills as fast as you can get them. Did you see this story? More than 200,000 pounds of codeine, morphine, oxycodone, hydrocodone, and meperidine were purchased at retail stores during the last year. The last year in the study, which was 2005. That's enough to give 300 milligrams of painkiller to every person in the country. Whoa. I don't know. Maybe it explains why we are the way we are. Here in Appalachia, they say that retail sales of hydrocodone, mostly sold as Vicodin, are the highest in the nation, and 9 of the 10 areas with the highest per capita sales are in rural West Virginia, Kentucky, or Tennessee. Amazing, isn't it? Amazing to live in a country that needs that much painkiller. Amazing to live in a country where truth and the light of day are seen as a threat to national security. If you were one of those charged by the Bush administration with disloyalty, or under the new executive order that came out a couple of weeks ago, doing something to materially negatively affect the prosecution of the war, the great patriotic war of freedom in Iraq, would you want your lawyer to have access to everything he needed or she needed to defend you? Of course you would. But everything is national security now. Everything is a national security issue. And only if we are able to pull back the curtain on these abuses, on these outright abuses of the Constitution, will we have any hope whatsoever of getting our country back from these murderous, monstrous thugs. I read the LA Times article about Mr. Eisenberg, and I was horrified. They shredded his banana peel. I repeat that, they shredded the banana peel. That's not national security, that's institutional insanity. And I don't use the term loosely. I mean diagnosable, purple crayon between the toes in the locked room crazy. They shredded the banana peel. It was for fear that it might have been an Al-Qaeda banana peel. Over and over again, say it to yourself. The federal government shredded a banana peel. The federal government shredded a banana peel. The federal daggum government shredded a confounded cotton-picking banana peel. Because the banana peel was a threat to national security. Whoop! Welcome to the coward nation. Welcome to Bushmerica. Welcome to Dickmerica. Welcome to life in a nation that is so scared of its own shadow that it is afraid of a banana peel. Can a nation that is scared of a banana peel win a war on terror? Can a nation that is scared of a banana peel win a war against anything? I don't think so. I need some freakish right-winger to explain to me why a banana peel is an issue of national security. I mean, this is craziness. They wouldn't shred a banana peel in an Austin Powers movie. I'll shred your banana peel, baby. Yeah! I've been sitting on this story for a couple of days, because some of them I like to digest a little bit and make sure that I'm not just going to open the microphone, open my mouth, and start screaming. John Adams, made a name for himself before there was ever a United States of America by stepping up and vigorously defending and seeing acquitted the British soldiers accused in the Boston so-called massacre. Wasn't a popular position to take. His fellow Bostonians didn't think too highly of him for it. But as a lawyer, he understood that he had a duty to provide a meaningful defense to these people, because otherwise there was no point in all of this talk about independence from the crown or making a democracy or being free. It was pointless. If he had just stepped back and said, well, you know, it might not be good for my political career, and let the mob take these people away and hang them from the sour apple tree or what the hell ever, the very notion of a free United States of America would have gone by the boards. John Adams would not be welcome in the Bush administration. The kind of lawyer that John Adams was would not be welcome in a trial court in Bushmerica. Because the kind of lawyer that John Adams was and that Mr. Eisenberg is deemed a threat to the mad lust for unlimited power that occupies the minds of the monsters in the Justice Department, the Bush administration in general, and the Republican Party in particular. We're at war. Right-wingers and Republicans like to, don't you know we're at war? They like to say that kind of thing all the time. But they think we're at war with Iraq. No, we're at war with the Tursts. No, right-wing freaks. The government of the United States is at war with us. The government of the United States is at war with the Constitution. The government of the United States, as run by George Bush's administration, is at war with the very fundamental principles upon which this country was founded. That a person should be, shall be, will be, and is safe and secure and free in his or her persons, paper, properties, and effects. I think of all the moments that make up a home life in an American household. The joys, the tragedies, the ennui, the boredom, the little tiny moments that string together to make up a life that at the end of which, if you make it a long one, you relive in those days before you go. And the thought that those days are subject to scrutiny by some amoral, immoral, conscienceless bastard in the bowels of the National Security Administration or some other part of this national security state makes me want to vomit. And yet the NRA, that bastion of freedom, they can't be bothered to complain about this. The American Legion, silent. VFW, silent. all the right-wing organizations, the Heritage Foundation, the Cato Institute, they're out there putting together insane justifications for the defeat of the liberties they claim to enshrine. And it falls to liberals and progressives like you and me to try somehow in this absolute storm of piss to keep the damn near sodden torch of liberty flickering. And that we do, and that we will do, and that we will not cease to do until we breathe out and do not breathe in again. Lord, Lord, Lord. To the phones. Bob is back. Hey, Bob.
I never left you.
Yeah, you did.
Hello.
Yeah.
I never left you.
Yeah, you did.
Well, I had a great supper.
Well, okay, then you left, so it's okay. You called back.
It wasn't something I did intentionally.
What's on your mind?
This phony FUX? Fog government?
Yeah, sure.
Telling us we have to do things their way? You know, always their way. Any other way is, it's not a patriot. You know, you're not a patriot unless you do it the Bush way, right?
Well, that's what they would have us believe.
Okay. Agent Fred, get off the damn phone. You're messing up doggone lines. I'm hearing buzzing. I'm hearing a lot of stuff. But I'm not hearing Bob. I can't hear Bob anymore.
I'm right here, Bob. Talk. Say your thing. I'm here.
Well, yeah, I'm here too. But, hey, I got this crazy buzzing going on right now. It's like, good gracious, I got bees in my ears or something. But, hey, I'm talking on the telephone. I'm not talking on, you know, AT&T. Oh, excuse me, Mr. Eavesdropper. Yeah, I'm on the AT&T network. Yeah? Is that not true, Bob?
I don't know. I don't know who your carrier is.
I don't either. I have no idea, but I pay these people money to give me a landline to talk to my friend Bob Kincaid. But they give me what? They give me buzzing. They give me some kind of... It sounds like this. I don't know, like a sawmill going off in the background, and I can't hear you very well.
That might be the background. That might be Bob. That might be the background noise of the fan going here in the studio because we just got to get things a little.
Hey, Bob, you are so faint I can't even hear your voice.
Okay, well, okay, you can't hear my voice. Say what you say. Talk.
Well, I'm talking because I'm not dead yet. They come out here and kill me. They don't have the, nards to come get me because all they want to do is silence me. They silence lawyers for the defense. They silence people that do not agree with them. People, please do not agree with them. Be part of the majority. The majority of people do not want someone snooping into their bedroom or into their living room or their bathroom or whatever.
Yeah.
You don't want people listening in or looking in on you unless they have what you call a writ of certiorari.
A search warrant.
A search warrant, yeah. A right to search. A proper court-ordered proper document that gives them the right to search. You don't want them coming into your house or your home or listening to what your children are, squabbling about where you're trying to tell them, hey, just behave, kids. Just do your thing. Just love each other. Stop the fighting, okay? And we're fighting each other every minute of every day because we're fighting what? Well, fighting against people that, they don't see your way. I don't see your way, Bob. I don't, because I'm not there with you. I'm not in your
Right, sure.
I'm not in your living room. I can't sit down there between you and Agnes and try to quell a dispute between the two of you. That's between you and my dear Agnes. That's your problem. It ain't mine. I'm not going to try to tell you how to run your home or your household or whatever. I'm not going to do it because I have no right to. I have no right to look into your bathroom window to see if, oh, goodness gracious, Bob Kincaid in the middle of the night gets up because he's, he has to pee. I don't want to have to pee.
And I'm so glad.
Well, no, I just don't want to.
I know. I know, Bob. I understand what you're getting at. And I resent the fact that the Bush administration thinks it has a right to find out, you know, what kind of shape my poor old 44-year-old prostate's in.
You see, the problem is not you and I. It's not the people or the peeps like to call themselves on the Hartman chat room or in that Nova M chat room. It ain't their problem. It's the problem of everybody that turns us against each other, and they have been doing it with a vengeance, Bob. They try to make us question whether your sanity or whether I'm insane or the other guy's insane. And goodness gracious, I mean, if Building 7 didn't get hit by a plane and it wasn't, nothing fell on it, how the hell did it fall down?
Don't go there.
No, I don't want to go there.
Right, I know.
See, if you go there, then the next thing you think is get out the tinfoil damn hat. And then, okay, yeah, it is a conspiracy. But, Bob, it's not a conspiracy of we the people. It's a conspiracy of they. They, the controllers, that tell us how to think. And I will not be part of their problem. Their problem is how to make us all react one against another. And they try to turn me against you, and my dear friends, do not allow them to turn you against each other. Stand together, because that's all you got. You don't got them, because they are against you. And we, the people, are still people, Bob. We're not sheep yet.
Some of us are.
We're still people. We can think. We can read. We can learn. We can figure it out for yourself.
Exactly, Bob. I got to roll on. I got calls to hit. Thanks, my friend.
Okay. Well, hey, tell them all out there.
Yep. Okay. Sorry. I don't know what. Alan. Hey, Alan, welcome aboard.
Oh, how you doing?
I'm doing good, you?
Pretty good. I was talking to a relative yesterday, and I hate to admit it, but this relative told me that they support this group called Jews for Jesus. And I'm trying to figure out what it is, and so far what I've found out is making me sick.
It's quite the interesting little group. I don't know. It's kind of like rock. It's kind of like rock and rollers against drugs. You know, it just makes no sense.
I read there's a website called X Jews for Jesus, and I've been reading some on it. I read somebody's account, and he said that when he got real engrossed in the organization, they wouldn't even let him go home to visit his relative. If I understand it right.
Yeah, it's. I think it's cultish.
Yeah. I don't really think it's very cultish.
Strange bunches out there. I mean, there are organizations that would just make your hair stand on end out there, if you look at them long enough. And you know, I don't know what's wrong with these people. I don't know what's lacking in their lives that they feel like, you know, this is what passes for an answer for them. I have no idea.
Yeah. Also, people who support groups like this, like this relative of mine, I just watch them, talk to them, debate with them every once in a while, and I get this impression that people like this don't take
Well, they
That's
do.
The way you see it.
And yeah,
the,
well, what they do is they've been conditioned by all the right-wing hate that's out there, Alan, to believe that the problem is always someone else. The problem is the problems never come with it, come from within themselves. You can see it in the approach that they take, for instance, that fundamentalists take toward so-called vices. If a fundamentalist has a drinking problem, the problem's not within the fundamentalist. The problem is that drinking is allowed, so they want to eliminate drinking. If they find out they have a gambling problem, the problem isn't that they have a gambling problem. The problem is gambling.
Yeah.
They have.
Like they want to kill everything.
Yeah. They want to kill it. They want to control it. They want to take it. They want to lock it down because they and what it is, it's an admission on their part, Alan, that they cannot work on their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
They have to take things away from the rest of us. In other words, and that's how you get things like people who profess to be fundamentalist Christians thinking that they're being persecuted. They're not, but they view persecution as anything that doesn't allow them to take over the country. I mean, whether it's an abortion debate, a booze debate, a gambling debate, whatever, they feel they have the right to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us via legislation that limits our freedom to do as we please, as long as we're not hurting anybody else. They're psychos, in other words.
Yeah, and it's very cultish. I was thinking. I talked to you before. I think I told you that I'm beginning to think that the whole
Love Bone, great stuff. So stick around, folks. You're on America's Liberal Voice, the Head On Radio Network, and we will be back.
The same place where the Adam and Eve myth arises. Does it make sense that maybe people back then would try through storytelling to sort out which was better than the other? Makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah. I also heard that there's other stories similar to the Garden of Eden, a myth on clay tablets in the Mesopotamian area, which don't show it as a fall. They're eating from the tree of Garden of Eden. I mean, knowledge of good and evil, and they're enjoying it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Alan, we've got to roll on. We've got news coming, but I always enjoy these little inquiries into the nature of our existence. And if more people would do it, I think we'd be in a better place.
Yeah, I think so too.
All right.
Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, thank you for calling. Always.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Take care. And we will go back to the phones right after the news. You're welcome to join in. I've got a couple of fun stories yet that I'm hell-bent on getting to this evening. Because you just kind of got to. This is America's Liberal Voice. This is The Horn. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Tourists are trying to get out of the Mexican Riviera ahead of Hurricane Dean's arrival. Experts say the Category 4 hurricane could grow to a Category 5, packing 155-mile-an-hour winds. Officials called for a red alert along the coast. They've shut down offshore oil facilities. Dean is set to hit tomorrow morning. On the Japanese island of Okinawa, 165 passengers managed to safely evacuate a jet just before it exploded into flames on the airport tarmac. That was 1 minute after landing. A roadside bomb killed the governor of a Shiite province in Iraq. It's the second assassination of a top provincial official within 1 week. Iraq's Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki is making his first visit to Syria since taking office last year. U.S. officials say that Syria is allowing foreign fighters to cross its borders as its capital city struggles with a growing number of Iraqi refugees. The head of the Senate Judiciary Committee says time's up for President Bush to produce evidence that his surveillance program is legal. Senator Patrick Leahy says the Bush administration is in contempt of Congress. In Peru, the government is turning its focus on the tens of thousands of survivors of last week's magnitude 8 earthquake. People need shelter, food, and water. Crews are working to stop the spread of disease also. 540 bodies have been recovered so far. The owner of the company working on the collapsed Utah mine broke his silence today with a statement that the company would not leave the mountain until they found their people. Bob Murray made daily statements until three rescue workers were killed last week. The attorney for the victims' families said they were upset by his recent absence. In central China Sunday, rescuers began pumping water out of a collapsed coal mine. Nearly 180 miners died when it caved in Friday. NFL star quarterback Michael Vick has agreed to a plea deal for his alleged role in a dogfighting operation. Vick reportedly accepted prosecutors' deal as a way to avoid further federal charges. Democratic Representative Bob Filner of San Diego will go to court on assault and battery charges after he reportedly pushed a United Airlines bag claim employee Sunday night at Dulles Airport in Washington. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business next.
For an insider's look at quality news coverage, be sure to read two of the latest books by award-winning journalist and author Tony Seaton. The Quality Interview and Don't Mess with the Press transport the reader into the world of journalism, including the ups and downs of network news coverage and what it's really like reporting the important events we see happening every day around the world. Don't Mess with the Press is an intriguing and engaging chronicle of Tony's early career, beginning with his start as a copy boy for ABC News back in the 1970s to working his way up to become producer of network news interviews for Barbara Walters. The Quality Interview is the definitive guide to the art of the interview. Learn interviewing basics and much more, including how to get crucial information out of even the toughest interview. For more on Don't Mess with the Press and The Quality Interview by Tony Seaton, visit our website at www.qualitynewsnetwork.com.
The space shuttle Endeavour's on its way home from the International Space Station. It's scheduled to land tomorrow. NASA ordered the shuttle to return a day early as a precaution to avoid any problems from Hurricane Dean for the space agency. An attorney has filed a class action lawsuit against Mattel regarding its massive recall of Chinese-made toys found to contain lead. The attorney says he wants the toy company to pay for the testing of children exposed to those toys who may have lead poisoning. Another casualty of the mortgage meltdown, Capital One Financial Corp says it will shut down its Greenpoint mortgage unit, eliminating 1,900 jobs immediately. The credit card company will shut its 31 Greenpoint offices. The Wall Street Journal reports the nation's largest mortgage lender, Countrywide Financial, has begun laying off staff. Those affected are responsible for originating loans. HSBC is in talks to buy a majority stake in Korea Exchange Bank, or KEB. That's South Korea's sixth largest bank. Light sweet crude is trading at $71.12 a barrel on the New York Mercantile. The Dow Jones Industrial Average ended up 42 points at 13,121. The NASDAQ was up 4 points at 2508, and the S&P ended even. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Eight past the hour. I'm Bob. Welcome back. And we will go straight away. Well, wait, before we go straight away to the phones, a programming announcement. You know what a peace-loving and decent human being our good friend, our IT consultant and host of Strictly Confidential, Peter Godbold, is. Peter is fit to be tied about now because guess what? The people that provide him with broadband internet service, I don't think it's his internet company. It's the phone company. And they've screwed up again, and Peter doesn't have a dial tone. Peter doesn't have internet service. Peter doesn't have, and this is a complicated technical term. Peter doesn't have diddly. So we will have a replay tonight of a Strictly Confidential program from a previous time. And believe you me, no one is more upset about that fact than Peter is. And I understand that completely. So, his apologies, my apologies, our apologies. What's the name of the company? Embark. E-M-B-A-R-Q. And they're apparently even more incompetent than Verizon. And man, is that saying something. So, if somebody eats a magic cookie or a magic cracker or something and Peter's internet miraculously comes back, he'll be alive. But I'd say the odds are pretty long against it because it's not during business hours and, well, you know how it is in the capitalist miracle that is Bushmerica. Services are minimalist as opposed to what, maximist? Yeah. To the phones and to Susan out in Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome aboard.
Hi, Bob.
How are you? I shouldn't ask, should I?
I've been canning for 4 days.
That is some hot, sweaty work.
Fortunately, it's been raining here, so it's not horrendously uncomfortable, but it's still...
How many quarts do you have up now?
Oh, cripe, who's counting?
you just kind of pack them away and yeah.
Yeah, I'm. Let me see. I'm right now. I'm canning Yukon Gold potatoes.
Oh, love those. Just love them.
What's really gonna make you sick is what I picked them up for.
How much?
69 cents a pound.
Oh, that's, yeah, that is. I can't get them for twice that at the local Kroger. What I also, I've looked for them in the past, back when I was doing gardens, and couldn't find seed potatoes of them either. It was very frustrating.
You have to get them online.
Mostly when we do potatoes here, I wind up planting Kennebecs.
Well,
although one year I did find some blue potatoes, and those were awfully good.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing better than a big pot of purple mashed potatoes, because they're not really blue, they're purple.
Yeah.
Love those.
Okay. Reason I call.
Okay.
I can't quite put my hands on the actual article. Maybe you spotted it. I know I did, but I just can't go back.
Yeah.
And put my hands on it right now. Are you aware that if you go outside into your front yard and flip the bird out up in the sky, George is going to get a picture of it?
I'd like to hope he will.
Yeah, they're flying YouTube flights over us.
Right.
Isn't it nice?
Well, because look, I'm
done by our own.
Yeah, America. Look, I'm not kidding, Susan. The American people are the most terrifying thing in the world to the Republican Party and the Bush administration. That's why they have to dummy up elections. That's why they have to rig voting scenarios. That's why they need Diebold touchscreen voting machines. Because the American people, if the American people were to actively and sincerely and seriously pursue taking back their freedoms, it would mean that that damn near every Republican politician in this country would have to do jail time.
Yeah, in chat, I typed in a kind of a pseudo. Now, Agent Fred, this was just a joke, so I don't want you to think I'm actually doing it. I'm not a hacker. But I typed in kind of a pseudo want ad. Wanted, one hacker able to hack into government computers and obtain proof of Bush administration impeachable offenses without getting caught.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, I happen to know quite a few guys who have the skills to do that. In fact, they, in their misspent youth, they had gone into, well, I know one who broke into Cheyenne Mountain and wandered around and very carefully left, and they never even knew he'd been there. And no, I'm not going to tell anybody, and he didn't do anything because he was a responsible citizen. He just wanted to know if he could do it.
Sure.
You know, he wasn't a malicious hacker. He just, okay, I can do that.
Well, you mentioned standing out in the yard and using both hands, to, you know, with the middle finger. I really do. I wish we had a little bit greater reach. I'd love to see that. I'd love to see a big middle finger painted on the rooftops all over America.
Oh, wouldn't that be just prime?
Yeah.
Because there's no way that they could get away from the fact that it was aimed directly at them. Because, hell, who else would see it?
You remember that that great seditious poster from, what, the late 60s, the 70s? That showed a mouse or some sort of small woodland creature. And he's standing on the ground, and there's this eagle with its claws spread out, screaming down at it. And the mouse or whatever the critter is just standing there giving the eagle the finger. And underneath it, it just said, the last great act of defiance.
Yeah.
That's us. We're the mouse now.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But the thing is, if the Bush administration had ever bothered to read history, they would find out that, yeah, that mouse alone, he's going to get it. But you put 200 million mice together? Bob, you are about to get trampled. I suggest you read up on the history of Nicholas II.
Well, yeah. Then again, they think they've got it all figured out. They think that they've got the. I mean, why do you think? How can I put this, Susan? All that time that was spent hollering about activist judges who want to, you know, who want to kill fetuses. Why do you think they spent all that time hoodooing the fundamentalists into a righteous, tongue-speaking, strychnine-guzzling, snake-handling frenzy? Why do you think they did that, Susan? It wasn't about activist judges, and it wasn't about women's right to control their own insides. They had to get right-wing ideological freaks on the bench for life to protect them because they already knew what they were doing.
Sure.
They. I mean the Bush administration. I mean the Republican Party. I mean these lying bastards who hate the Constitution. They knew what they were going to do by way of assaulting the Constitution, and they needed to ramrod judges down our throats to make sure that when they, you know, that some guy like Mr. Eisenberg could have his banana peel shredded.
Isn't that appalling? I remind you again, revolt in 2100. How did Nehemiah Scudder's empire get overthrown?
Oh, help me.
It wasn't that the true believers stopped believing. No. It was the rebels used their own beliefs against them. I can still remember the line. In the name of God, destroy them all.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're not there yet. Because
no, we're not.
We as liberals, we as progressives...
And we're not at the point of armed revolution. But if we can turn the Fundy's faith against them, if we can do that, if we can turn the Fundy's faith on the Bushies, oh, it's Katie bar the door.
Sure.
And that's what we have to do. We can't just sit back and look down our noses at these people. We have to convince them, and preferably using scripture. And that's where people like you come in, because you know it backwards and forward. We have to convince them.
Well, but we have to convince them, but we have to get our own people singing off the same page of the hymnal at the first, though, Susan. And by that, this is just a story. This is just by way of illustration. You've heard me refer to our good friend Eugene Finnerman with Your RDA of Irony over at FinnermanWorks.com.
Right.
This guy is one of the sharpest, smartest, wittiest, quickest, funniest people that I know, that I happen to know is wandering around on the face of planet Earth today. Brilliant and has a real, real sharp pen for satire. Well, Eugene penned one the other day called Fodder of the Bride. And he said, and this is just a little bit, Jenna Bush was in her customary pool of vomit when awakened to the announcement of her engagement. Oh, Mommy, can't I just get an abortion? Not this time, dear.
Wait.
Not this time, dear, and please don't let Uncle Neil do that again. By the way, if anyone asks, your fiancé is named Henry Hager. Who? You remember, Carl's flunky. He's very accommodating. He was available to be Mary Cheney's fiancé, but Mary wouldn't cooperate. Why should I? Daddy needs the good publicity. Carl says so. The media will be preoccupied with your choice of China pattern, so it won't notice any distractions like, well, mentioning them only makes them real. Let's not. And the Democrats will be afraid to say anything because we can accuse them of trying to spoil your wedding. But, Mommy, I don't want to. Why not Barbie? Mr. Cheney and Al Burrito think that she might be a Democrat. She may have actually learned something at Yale. We know that you can be trusted. And I'm afraid that our only other choice would be killing your grandfather and making it look like a liberal did it. But what about Grandmommy? Believe me, if she could be killed, I would have done it years ago. No, Mommy, I meant that Grandmommy would be upset if we killed Pappy. Well, actually, she did object when Carl proposed the idea. She'll only permit it if Jeb's running for president. So, that's brilliant, right? That's just a gorgeous little piece of satire. Well, Eugene set himself a diary up over at Daily Kos and published it there. He got all of four comments, one of which accused him of being a troll, and another one of which was very concerned that it was too far over the top.
Oh, good grief.
Now, do you understand what I mean about we have to get on the same page in the hymnal?
Yeah, now you know why I stay away from the Daily Kos, because they're just, I don't know where they get their money from. I really don't. Because they're all, like Joe calls them, they're all concerned trolls.
I love that phrase.
I love it, too. I hope Joe doesn't mind because I've stolen it. But it's lovely. What happened? My God, I grew up with that lovely program, and it was on network television called That Was the Week That Was.
Yeah, that was a dandy.
Now, you want satire. Of course, they were taking on John F. Kennedy, and that was allowed.
I love the opening lines of this. Jenna Bush was in her customary pool of vomit when awakened to the announcement of her engagement. Oh, Mommy, can't I just get an abortion? Not this time, dear.
I wonder if he'd mind if I put it up on our blog.
Oh, Eugene is thrilled to have people see his stuff.
I will email him for permission.
Oh, no, I can tell you. You can put it up there. Yeah, just link to it.
I don't put anything up without permission. Unless it's a snippet.
Susan.
But if I'm going to put the whole thing up, I want permission.
Well, just link to it. He needs the traffic at his website anyway.
Yeah. You did mention your previous conversation about the cult.
Yeah. I got proof, by the way.
I'm not surprised. Some of these people are strange. Well, some of these people are downright warped. Come on.
Let's go. I got strange. I got warped. Do I hear evil? Do I hear evil? I got evil. I got strange, warped, and do I hear evil? Give me evil here. In the back room, I've got evil. Yes. I've got evil. Can I hear monstrous? Who's got a monstrous for me? Monstrous. I got monstrous on the side of the room. Thank you for the monstrous. We got evil, mean, twisted, and monstrous.
Oh, God, yeah. You got something really bad, don't you?
Yeah.
I will get off the line then and let you...
Oh, no. I want to hear you scream, okay?
Okay.
Wait. This is proof of cult behavior. Are you familiar with Wiley S. Drake?
What?
Susan? Wiley S. Drake.
No.
Wiley S. Drake is a former national leader of the Southern Baptist Convention. And he's a pastor in...
sounding bad.
He's a pastor in Buena Park, California. And he has called upon his congregation for... and this is a term that for something called imprecatory prayer.
Oh, good God.
Do you know what imprecatory prayer is?
Yes.
Uh-huh. I imagine somewhere... imprecatory stuff is something you Wiccan folk don't engage in because you realize it's a curse. That's right. And when you use them, they tend to, I'm rubber and you're glue and it bounces off me and sticks to you. Right?
Threefold.
Okay, exactly. Well, you're also familiar with the organization Americans United for Separation of Church and State?
Yes.
Well, the Americans United for Separation of Church and State filed an IRS complaint demanding that Drake's church, Wiley S. Drake's church's nonprofit status be investigated and pulled because Drake used church letterhead to write a formal endorsement of right-wing fundamentalist freak Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee in his bid for the presidency. And he also endorsed him during a church-affiliated internet radio show.
Oops.
So Americans United, Joe Kahn, and Jeremy Leeming filed a complaint with the IRS.
Uh-huh. They should have.
Well, Wiley Drake has called for imprecatory prayer against Mr. Leeming and Mr. Kahn. And this is the quote. Well, first of all, he referred to them as the enemies of God. And then he said to his congregation, his Southern Baptist congregation, this is the kind of stuff, Susan, we used to have stories about this, and it would be about the Moonies, okay, or the Krishnas, or the Scientologists putting rattlesnakes in people's mailboxes, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. This is the Southern Baptists. Quote, God says to pray imprecatory prayer against people who attack God's church. The Bible says that if anybody attacks God's people, David said this is what will happen to them. Children will become orphans and wives will become widows. Let his days be few and let another take his office. Let his children be fatherless and his wife a widow. That is what he called upon the congregation of his church to pray for the death of Joe Kahn and Jeremy Leeming.
I wonder if Mikey,
this is a follower of the Prince of Peace.
Yeah, I wonder if Mikey would like a little something. It's not a curse, but basically what it is you reverse anything that's being sent to you with ill intent. So you're not cursing somebody. You're just saying, I'm holding up a mirror. So instead of hitting you, it hits the person who sent it.
Well, you know, that kind of bad energy can't help but do things like that. You know, back in the 90s, this goober had a big protest of Gay Day at Disneyland. And he also protested a Two Live Crew concert because it's obscene.
It's a what?
It's obscene.
Oh, give me a break.
This sick bastard. Khan said, we expected him to try to defend his actions. Instead, he goes on spiritual blitzkrieg against us, praying for our destruction. He completely glossed over the fact that his actions are clearly a violation of federal tax law.
Uh-huh.
Strike him down, Jesus. Strike him down. Welcome to the cult that is the Southern Baptist Convention, Susan.
Lovely, lovely people. Just love them to death.
And
on a lighter note,
yeah.
Our dear friend, the football player Vic, has decided to cop a plea.
Yeah, I was pleased to see that. Of course, the question is, will he do any prison time? Or I don't know. Maybe George Bush will decide that the punishment was too harsh.
Either way, his football career is over.
His career as a quarterback. Okay, now wait, you're talking to a football fan here. His career as a quarterback is over. I think he could probably sneak back into the NFL in a couple of years as maybe a wideout or a running back. But he's done as a quarterback.
Something.
What?
He was betting on those games. Oops!
You mean betting on the fights?
Yeah, betting on the fights. That's gambling. That's a death penalty.
Oh, no. Gambling is only a death penalty if you're gambling on your sport.
And
hence
on top of that...
Hence the Pete Rose issue.
I don't think the NFL wants to have PETA throwing fish heads at every appearance Dick makes. And they will count on it. And frankly, I think they're justified.
Well, you say he's done in the NFL, but I think if you stop and you consider the... basic nature of an NFL owner, he ain't done. There's somebody out there that will hire Michael Vick because they think that Michael Vick will A, bring people to the stadium, and B, score touchdowns.
And then they're going to have to cross those PETA picket lines, and PETA has been known to throw blood, and they get nasty. And I don't think the NFL owners want to touch that. I wouldn't blame them.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll lay a $5 bill to a quart of potatoes. And we'll see what goes down in 2 years. Because he's not facing more than 2 years prison time. He's getting
That depends, because it all depends on... He's copping a plea, yes. But it depends... It all depends on what the judge is going to give him.
But he's got. But again, the judge is sort of handcuffed by the sentencing guidelines, and there is a range of X number of months up to, I think, 24 months.
Yeah, but the thing is, his knees. He was a running quarterback, remember?
Mm-hmm.
His knees. Remember, Gerald.
And that's the thing. If he's gonna come back, he's got a long way to travel to do so.
Yeah, personally.
Because 2 years in prison, I don't care how good the gym is there. He can't keep up with the training requirements for an NFL football player.
No, personally, I would dearly love to never see him in the NFL again. I think he's scum. Some of the things I saw, I read in transcripts. And I'm not a dog person. I'm not. I'm a cat person. But they're appalling.
Yeah, they are. Dog fighting is appalling.
Yeah. But it wasn't just the dog fighting. It was everything else, too.
Oh, yeah. The way they were treated and putting them down if they didn't fight well enough.
No. Executing them.
Yeah.
Torturing them. That, you know, it's just appalling. And we want this guy's a Roman. Give me
Yeah. Well, that's the NFL has a problem, and I don't know if Commissioner Goodell is going to get serious about it. It looks like he's trying to, between this business with Vic and the business with Adam Pac-Man Jones over in the Tennessee Titans. It looks like he's trying to get a handle on it. Whether he's able to remains to be seen.
The NFL has a problem. The NBA and a lot of teams in the NBA had a problem. Portland had a problem until they literally finally basically swapped out most of the team.
Yeah.
Because they were doing dope. They were out.
Well, look at the Minnesota Vikings with their houseboat party a couple of years ago.
Yeah. And, you know, these guys are supposed to be role models, not in this lifetime.
No, I won't let my son in particular hold up any of these people as a role model. And he hasn't, because they're not fit for it.
No, they're a bunch of self-indulgent prima donnas, and I don't need it.
Yep.
As far as I'm concerned, they've ruined it. And it used to be a good game.
Yeah, it did. To be quite honest with you, I love college ball, and I'll get email about it again. Yeah, you're participating in the fascist nightmare, Bob. No, I love college football. I just do, and I get to step away from some of this insanity once in a while, and follow my Mountaineers and the SEC and yada yada yada. I love college football. The NFL bores me to tears. It just does. There's no creativity to it. The prices that are paid for the players' mandate, to the extent humanly possible, a style of play that tries to minimize risk, which I understand given the money that's being paid, but it makes for a lousy product.
Well, I'm the equivalent of a Sox fan, even though I'm a fan of the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Well, and have been since the franchise opened.
Well, good for you. You know, good that you're not a bandwagoner. Oh, and this has been cleared up. David the Barracks lawyer writes and says the judge has 36 months available to him with Vic. The commissioner has signaled every way he can that it will be a year suspension on top of whatever the judge does to Vic. And just as he did with Tank Johnson in Chicago, jail time and suspension. So whenever it is that Vic gets out of prison, he will have a year NFL suspension following that.
Yeah. Long time.
Yeah, it is.
I doubt if
Vic's seventh? It would have been his seventh season in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it may be a career ender. You're in that regard, you're absolutely right. Susan, I got to roll on. Thank you, dear.
You have a real nice night, and give your dear wife a kiss for me.
I sure will, and you get back to that pressure canner.
Yes, sir. I only have two more jars to go, and then I'm done, at least until more beans come in.
All right, then. Take care.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That's hot, brutal work. Anybody who's done it will tell you. But it's also great. It's great fun because... When you hit those just almost suicidal days of February, when you think that spring will never come, and you're down to the last couple of jars of home canned whole tomatoes, and you open that thing up, it's like Holy Communion. It is. And maybe you'll make cream stewed tomatoes on homemade biscuits. Whoo, mama! To the phones, Richard is calling from California. Hey, Richard, welcome aboard.
I'm having a hard time hearing you.
I'm sorry.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Okay, I'll do my best. My phone's turned up all the way. Just want to tell you, I've been listening to you in the kitchen for the last few minutes. Have a transmitter on the computer.
Okay.
That's transmitting to a little, junky radio in the kitchen.
Yeah, so you finally got it built.
What's that?
You finally got it built. I know you've been working on it for a while.
Well, it's not so much building and working. It's modifying a cheap Chinese thing that TSM had sent me. She bought it and couldn't make it work for herself. And I'm wondering if I should do a rumor on your website about what I found out.
Oh, I think it would be very helpful to folks.
Because there may be a way that people can spend
be able to walk away from the computer, do stuff, can potatoes maybe.
Yeah, exactly. That's the idea. So far, I just got about barely enough distance to make it work okay. And I think she paid about $15 for this thing. But I did have to modify it, and that's the downside. Most people won't be able to do that.
Yeah, by modify it, you mean get in and really monkey with the guts of it?
Well, in this case, no. Actually, believe it or not, the device uses its cord as an antenna. So the audio cord that's actually, you know, like if you had a Walkman that you'd plug into the earphone jack,
mm-hmm.
is the transmitting antenna.
I'll be darned.
And the problem was that this cord was coiled, and the coiling was preventing it from acting as a decent antenna. So what I did is I just changed it to a straight cord, but I took off a brand new $1 headset from the dollar store,
mm-hmm.
and that's actually forming a decent transmitting antenna.
That's kind of brilliant.
The average listener is not going to have the skill to solder, you know, to make this change. So I'm still looking. I'm still, you know.
Yeah.
In other words, if I had sold this thing with a straight cord on it, it would be just right.
That's a neat little piece of work, though.
Well, the question is anybody, you know, whatever this thing is, it came from some storefront fly-by-night in Brooklyn, New York, and, I mean, there are probably 50 different devices out there being marketed by, you know, 50 different people that are identical to this, that have exactly the same circuit board, just different boxes and different cords. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I don't know which they are. You know?
Right.
I'm not loaded with money right now to do the research. So I called about something else.
Okay.
And that is, you know, the constant topic of impeachment and the logistics of this. And I wrote to my congressman, logistics of this. And I wrote to my congressman. I said, you know, want to impeach Cheney first, and while we're at it, how about starting with Gonzo?
Yeah.
So I got a letter back from Miller.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And, you know, he starts out by saying,
thank you for writing.
Thank you for voicing your strong concerns, and, you know, you and I agree on the abysmal record of this president, blah, blah, blah.
But?
However, while I agree with much of the criticism of the president and vice president, I strongly believe that my energies, the energies of Congress, and the energies of the country should first and foremost be devoted to stopping the war in Iraq, where hundreds of American soldiers are being killed or wounded each month, and, you know, spending money and all this crap. Let's see. What has been already a gross tragedy will only get worse. I agree with your concerns about the administration. The problem is that an impeachment effort would consume the Congress and would not be guaranteed of being successful and would take away from the effort to stop the war. We must bring our troops home and focus on truly protecting Americans from the threat of terrorism that this war has only fueled. And then he goes on to say, we've had over 150 oversight hearings and we're making progress. Well, he's not really speaking to my logic.
No, he's not. And frankly, I've heard that line of thinking come out too many times from too many disparate Democratic sources, Richard, to think that it's spontaneous. That is the party line.
Exactly. Well, it's a Pelosi line.
Bingo.
I think.
Bingo. I mean, yeah, it is.
And, you know, we're only separated, let me see, I'm about 13 miles from Pelosi's, you know, constituents. And, you know, this recent very frightening bill that got passed in the Senate.
Yeah.
I'm blanking out on, what is it called anyway?
The Make America Safer Act?
Yeah, something like that.
No, I'm not kidding. I think that's pretty close, yeah.
You know, my Feinstein voted for it,
I know.
And my boxer was absent.
Yeah, just not voting, right.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, I think, well, first of all, Miller's response to me is a non-starter. I mean, it seems like we've been down this road before, and Bush just walks all over everybody. And that the only thing that will work on the Republicans is fear.
So how do you motivate them with fear in this instance?
Well, that's the question, you know.
Well, I've said all along that the way you motivate them with fear in this is you ask them, you know, you give them all, the little rubber bracelets that say live strong or, you know, eat cornflakes or whatever.
I'm sitting here, in fact. A friend of mine has cancer.
We need to give one of those little rubber bracelets imprinted with the letters WWHD to every Republican that will take one. And let them snap it against their wrist because it stands for What Would Hillary Do?
Well, you know what I'm thinking is here I am in a relatively safe area. But how do we make the Republican senators and Congress people so scared for their positions that they will actually vote to impeach and convict the gang?
See, this is where it gets kind of sad and disheartening, Richard. I don't think you can. Okay, you can't. Trent Lott, Mitch McConnell, the Jeffrey Beauregard, Sessions the Third. These guys are such deep seated ideologues. They don't scare. They don't scare because they don't care.
But there's other people, you know.
But the thing is, the only scare to them is an electoral scare, and they know that they don't. You know what? One third of the Senate is up for re-election in 2008, so they know. I mean, they just by doing simple math, Richard, they know that impeachment is not an issue for them.
But how about the Olympia Snows?
Well, but see, in 2000... I do see what you're getting at, Richard, but...
Yeah,
what,
I mean, Trent Lott doesn't give a damn. He'll do what he does.
Right, but with Olympia Snow, Susan Collins, those kind of people, what they do is they make it to 2008 and they say, look, he's gone. It's over. Let's move forward now for the people. You see what I'm saying?
I do, maybe my Miller wants to go that route too, but I think we agree that it's very dangerous to let that play out and not punish these people.
It is dangerous. It's not just dangerous. It's it may be terminal to the Republic.
That's what I'm talking about.
And I mean, this is disheartening to me, Richard, because I don't know what in the Constitution we have to show to people. I don't know what has to happen. I don't know if Dick Cheney has to stand in the middle of Pennsylvania Avenue and bite the heads off babies or what.
Well, the press isn't going to help, obviously.
No.
You know, the industrial press, and that's a whole other topic. I mean, I don't know where to begin on that one. I mean, you know, I live in a metropolitan area of over 4 million people, and that's the San Francisco Bay Area.
Right.
And we have actually quite a number of newspapers, you know, many of them in the smaller cities, and they may come out once or twice a week. But the reality is that every single newspaper in the entire Bay Area is put out now by one guy. And he's in Denver, Colorado.
Yeah, what is it, Knight Ridder?
No, Knight Ridder's gone.
Yeah, Knight Ridder is gone, yeah.
McClatchy? It's the company that bought them, that bought this particular batch of papers, and I'm forgetting.
Yeah, I can't remember either, and I usually keep up with that kind of thing. But, well, and again, that's media monopolization, and that is it's a direct threat to any sort of a free country.
Yeah.
So
we are left
with a political reality. I'm not saying for people to quit militating for impeachment. No, 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 no. I'm not saying that even a little bit.
Yeah.
But I am saying that the traditional means by which we would expect to accomplish it, they're not available. See, historically speaking, Richard, we've done a lot of comparison and contrast between the Bush administration and the Nixon administration because, frankly, it's what we have at hand. You know, it's really too much apples and oranges to try to compare a semen-stained blue dress and anything that the Bush administration has done. You can't get any good out of it. But if you look at the Nixon administration versus the Bush administration, see, these people have spent 30, 40 years examining it before we ever started thinking about it, okay? Mm-hmm. And what they have come up with out of it is that Nixon, at the end of the day, could have saved himself if he just wouldn't have cooperated, okay?
Okay.
And so that's what you get. That's what you've gotten out of the Bush administration. Oh, you want to serve a subpoena? Fine, serve a subpoena. We ain't coming.
That's right.
The Nixon administration fought and fought and fought, whether it was Pentagon Papers, yada, yada, yada. They fought, but when they lost and acted within a constitutional framework, and one could arguably even say with something approaching a Republican manifestation of grace. All right?
Mm-hmm.
The Bush administration isn't going to do that. Because
But this is where we're at. Now, what's Bush's popularity rating right now?
What, 23, 24, 25%?
Something like that's what I hear. And so it certainly tells us that there are a lot of people in this country who are pretty dissatisfied.
Yeah, but they simply don't care, Richard.
Well,
because they know that no matter how dissatisfied people are,
come walking down the street, you know, when it hits home, when they see the people who've been maimed and disfigured, you know,
that's the thing. They're not going to see, Richard. They're not going to see. They're not going to be permitted to see. That's why we don't see the planes landing at Dover Air Force Base.
No, I know that.
Okay, people see very little. You don't see people. I mean, I live in a small community that's got a pretty good handful of Iraq veterans. You don't see anybody walking around with a missing a leg or anything. This is an invisible war to the American people.
Now, where are those people right now?
I don't know.
I mean,
Vietnam went on long enough that sooner or later you started seeing some of the after effects. But that took years.
Yeah.
You know, the protests against the Vietnam War only kicked into full swing after, what, 8 years of it?
Yes, indeed. Definitely.
I mean, we tolerated all manner of abuses. We tolerated all manner of escalations. We tolerated attacks on non-combatant countries. We tolerated. And only because there was a draft, and only because college kids were getting their fat thrown in the fire, did the protest movement ever build any kind of momentum.
I often suspect that the protest movement didn't accomplish very much of anything. And, that other things were taking their toll.
But in the final analysis, it was Nixon's, and, you know, Keith Olbermann pointed this out in one of his comments a while back. Nixon finally acquiesced in favor of the Constitution. This bunch under George Bush doesn't give the Constitution any regard. This gang under George Bush thinks the Constitution is a nuisance. The Constitution is something to be gotten out of the way.
Yeah, it's very clear that that's their attitude: my way or the highway.
And so you know that, like I said, a lot of this is simple math, Richard. They know that it's going to take X amount of time to move a challenge to a subpoena all the way through the court system up to and including a ruling by the Supreme Court. if by, and if the Supreme Court, they have absolute confidence that they will get a ruling in their favor. If, on the other hand, they don't, the Bush administration knows that they can say, how many divisions does the Supreme Court command, and tell the Supreme Court to eat it, and tell Congress to eat it, and tell the American people to eat it. That is the level of Machiavellian analysis that this whole scenario has been given by the White House. They can stall for time, and even if they have a losing outcome, they just tell America to eat it.
Correct.
I mean, George Bush will leave office on January 2009 only if George Bush chooses to leave office. That's how grave this is.
So, the question on my mind is there anything we can do to short-circuit that whole thing?
Yeah, there is, but getting people to do it has proven to be nigh impossible. I mean, there's can-do and there's will-do. You know, if a million people... if a million people surrounded the White House and said, we will not leave, period, until George Bush does, it gets pretty serious.
Yeah, and people, you've had that discussion with people.
Yeah, but we're not willing to do that.
Yeah. Well, we can't, you know.
No, we're debt slaves.
Yeah.
And especially now with the market melting down. You know, people are losing their homes.
Yes.
Out of the, you know, it's not just a Wall Street problem where some greedy SOBs who made some bad decisions are having to pay the price for it now. Working Americans are paying the price in foreclosures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with notes getting accelerated and payment being demanded. And frankly, people are. You want the there's terrorism for you. There's an act of terrorism.
Yep.
So you know, can we do something? Yes, we can. Will we do something? My money says no, Richard. My money says no.
Well, I'm thinking about us. You know, in other words, our band of comrades, head-on comrades.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
I thought, for instance, if I knew anybody who lived in a red state, could I work on that person? Could I get that person to write a letter to his or her senator? A very stern, angry letter.
Well, work at it, Richard. Work at it, and let us.
I knew somebody. You know, it's like what I feel like doing. I've mentioned this to you before. Is writing to Feinstein, for instance. No,
do
Democrat in name only, and say, look, you voted for this, you voted for that, you voted for the other thing, and every time you've done this, you have voted against me, and I'm your constituent, and you have already lost my vote in the last election, which is true, by the way. And I will vote for a Republican just to get you out. And really do it, you know. What's the difference between a reactionary Democrat versus a liberal Republican? I might be better off with a Republican.
I won't go that far with you, Richard.
I really won't.
But I've got one more call. I've got one more call I want to get on here in the last couple of minutes.
Go ahead.
But thanks for your thoughts, and more importantly, keep working on it. I mean, we've got to have skull sweat applied to these problems. They're not insoluble, but they are insoluble under the current thinking that we've all engaged in.
Yeah. Okay, Bob, get on to your call.
Thanks, Richard. Bye now.
Okay, see ya.
And we will give Kate the last word tonight. Hey, Kate.
Hey, is that me?
Yeah, that's you.
If I get a bad enough phone, will you game me down? Ooh, I love it. Richard asked, or somebody, one of you asked, where are these people, the amputees and the people who are crazy coming home?
Yeah.
Well, the 25 percenters aren't going to see them because those people don't hang out in gated communities. The people who live in gated communities shop at exclusive shopping centers and grocery stores. Those people are downtown on the street. They're in the back wards of the VA hospital. They live in the rest areas out on the road where other people, you know, there's a whole subculture of people out there that even the progressive liberals don't know about. And so that's where all the babies are that they're...
Well, that's why it was a little bit tough for me, because we had a unit go from this area.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody died. Thank God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are tales that are beginning to be told. But even in this little area where, you know, you really can't hide.
No.
Don't see it. You don't see it.
Nope. Because some of them can act just enough. They can just get it together enough to get out and get some groceries and then go home and stare at the television and forget to turn it on. It's sad out here. You need to get out more often.
So you are seeing?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you just have to live in a rest area for a few weeks, and you see a lot of people coming through. Anyway.
Yeah.
And I still hang with the conspiracy theory that the Embark don't want no queers on the radio in Florida.
I'm beginning to move toward your side, Kate.
Thank you. I see. Ever the Cassandra. Nobody ever believes me. Never, ever believes me. So.
But then if we start believing you, you won't be Cassandra anymore.
That's true. I'll be have to change my name, huh? Anyway, it's time to
it's
get
time
out
to
here
go.
And,
yeah.
You and Agnes did a good job on the audio on that last call. Way to go.
Thank you.
Rock.
All right. Later, Kate.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
And we are out of here. Thank you, Agnes, for all your hard work. Thank you, everybody, for joining in the chat room, your emails, your phone calls, or maybe just sitting quietly and screaming at the speakers. Thank you. It means more than maybe you can imagine. Thanks to Ben Birch, the vacationing Ben Birch. If you sense any problems in the stream, it's on me, okay? Rest and relax, Ben and Katie and the two members of the Master Race. They're puppies. And get to feeling better, Billy Shears. We're thinking about you. And always, always, always. Gina, RMR, it's all for you.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Join us at Night Sounds this Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the very latest in new releases, one-hit wonders, and Erica Richards with Night Sounds Dedications. And remember, get your dedication in by emailing Erica Richards at BillyShearsMusic.com. Also, we'll have a listener's choice segment, so be there Saturday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. Right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face.
Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
This is the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. A key week ahead for U.S. policy in Iraq. President Bush is expected to file a formal report in the next few days on the performance of the Iraqi government in meeting U.S. set goals for eventual peace. Top U.S. commander in Iraq, General David Petraeus, testified for several hours on Capitol Hill today in an attempt to buy time for the White House war plan to continue. He told Congress that the troop surge is working, but also admitted that success has been uneven. Current military strategy is expected to continue with U.S. troop withdrawal to begin early next year. Another strategy assessment would be carried out in 6 months. Seven U.S. soldiers were killed this morning in a vehicle rollover crash in Baghdad. A U.S. soldier died Sunday of injuries sustained in combat in northern Iraq. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki told his parliament today that Iraqi forces are not ready to take over security from U.S. troops. Al-Maliki said violence has dropped 75% in and around Baghdad since the U.S. began in February. An AP Ipsos survey found that only 36% of those questioned believe the troop increase has helped stabilize Iraq. That's up slightly from 32% in February as the buildup was beginning. FBI Director Robert Mueller defended the Bush administration's request for more surveillance power. Stressing the importance of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, Mueller said watering down those powers would cause the country to lose half of the tools now in use to fight terrorism. Al-Qaeda says Osama bin Laden will release another video statement this week to mark the 6th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. Bin Laden had not appeared in a video for 3 years until just a few days ago. Colombian police have arrested the man known allegedly as the country's leading drug kingpin, Diego Montoya. He is considered one of the legends of the Colombian underworld and was captured in his home province, Valle de Coca, in front of his mother and two bodyguards. In northern Mexico, a truck carrying more than 25 tons of dynamite exploded. At least 37 people were killed.